from sunny St. Leonard's on the south coast of the UK. This is the Keto Woman Podcast, brought to you by me, Daisy Brackenhall. Hello, keto lovelies, and welcome to episode 218, which is also the second part of my chat with Dan Grief. Now, if you listened to the first part of our chat last week, you will have mostly heard me regale you with the story of my move from France to the UK, which was not exactly a pleasurable experience. So I apologise for being a bit of a hog in that episode and taking up the majority of it, although Dan did manage to shoehorn in some chat in the latter part. This week, you'll be pleased to hear, is much more balanced. And we're basically just sort of chatting around our mutual experience as podcasters. If you don't know Dan already, do go back and listen to his original episodes that we recorded about a year ago. And the link to those is, of course, in the show notes. He's a lovely, lovely guy and very interesting to boot. He's heavily into politics, and I think, as I might have mentioned last year, I wouldn't be surprised to see him up there as our Prime Minister one of these days. He certainly ticks all the boxes that I have that I would like as a Prime Minister. And let's just say that none of the MPs that are around at the moment seem to be doing that. Not a great deal to catch up on this week. I think I mentioned last time that I was going off to do a few nice sort of treaty things this week. Well, most of them didn't come to pass thanks to COVID. But I did go to the dog park get together, which was really good fun. And the dogs got to all try out their new cozy coats. And I think there's even a picture coming up in social media. One of my friends at the dog park snapped a picture of me, and I think it's Rocket and Betts sitting on a bench. But they all looked very smart, and the coats seemed very cozy and kept them warm, which was, of course, the reason for getting them. The party I was going to was cancelled, and my trip to London to spend the day with my brother, we also decided to postpone. Well, both of those two things have been postponed, actually. The party, I think, has been pushed back to the summer sometime. It just seemed to be a sensible decision to make in this latest variant environment. Talking of COVID stuff, I managed to get a last-minute appointment to have a booster done last weekend, which didn't go too badly, had the usual sort of side effect of wiping me out for a day or two and a sore arm, but plenty of dips in the sea seemed to have helped with that. And funny enough, actually, I was watching a documentary called The Ponds on Netflix, which is all about the outdoor swimming ponds at Hampstead, and they follow it throughout the year. And there was a woman on there talking about, now I can't remember the condition she had. I don't think it was fibromyalgia, but it was something that basically involved chronic pain. She was in pain pretty well all of the time. And she said that swimming was her one time of release, particularly this was in the winter when it was very cold. The hour she spent there, and then she had this sort of roll-on effect for an hour. So she was talking about this sort of magical window each day when she was pain-free. And I have to say, I noticed the same thing with my arm. I had a very sore arm from the jab. And I mean, I guess it's mostly down probably to just being very, very cold and everything being numbed. I don't know. I think there's probably a little bit more to that. Things like dopamine rushing around your system. But whatever it is, it makes me feel good. And I've been down there every morning as usual, and it's been lovely. Couple of mornings have just been glorious and seen the sunshine. But overall, it's been a little bit sort of miserable weather, actually. But not full on raining, so I can't complain. The week ahead doesn't look too good. But of course, it won't stop me. I think there is an en masse dip on Christmas Day, but I shall probably just keep to my schedule, actually, and head down there pretty early in the morning. I'm usually in the water by about 8:30. So I think I'll probably just stick to that. There are pretty well always people down there at that time, so I'm sure there will be people to say hello to. The turnstones, delightful little birds that show up on the beach where I am, have been showing up more and more because I take down a little pot of seeds. And so that's just another thing to add to the "this experience brings me joy" thing every morning. Because anywhere from one to about a dozen turn up to get their seeds, and they come really close. It's very nice to see. So that really is about it. This will be coming out on Christmas Eve, and I usually save wishing you the best to the end, but in case you're not still with me by then, I do hope you have a very wonderful Christmas. If you don't do Christmas, I hope you have a very wonderful weekend, a very wonderful holiday, a very wonderful whatever you would like to call it. But for now, we are going to get back to Dan and I's chat. I will see you on the other side.
But I was going to ask you about your podcast, and how have you found post-move, trying to, you know, keep going with the shows and all the editing on top of all that move? I mean, I imagine after a while you settled in, so you just get on with it again. But I was going to ask you about your year podcasting and how that went.
Well, I did get, it's one of the things I got quite well prepared for. Obviously, I knew the move was coming up, so I really worked hard coming up to the end of the year last year and getting recordings done, getting those edited so that I could have them ready to go out, because I didn't know, you know, how long things would take getting set up here, how long it would take to get the internet up and going, for example, and all those kind of things. And I think, as is so often the case when you have such an intense experience like that, it takes it out of you in so many ways. Yeah. I mean, it's up there, isn't it, on the list of the most stressful things.
Oh, yeah.
Moving. And, you know, you throw into that moving from a different country and all the Brexit and COVID nightmares. It absolutely was a very stressful experience. And I think at that time I'd set up to have a month of repeats. Prior to that, I hadn't got into the whole running repeats if there was an off week for some reason or other. I'm one of those kind of person, if I sort of slip into that, if I'm not too careful, it becomes a bit of a habit. Yeah. And I find it difficult to get back into doing the thing that I was supposed to be doing in the first place. And that's kind of exactly what happened. That month, I think, ended up running into about 3 months in the end. Right. And I kind of lost my mojo for a while. I had a real problematic period of depression, and everything sort of got on top of me, and it was really difficult. And it's interesting what you were saying before about allowing yourself to be vulnerable with the people who are out there. And I feel very, very lucky with the people who listen to the podcast, the people who support the podcast. We're very, very forgiving and kind and caring over that period of time where, yeah, you know, I shared certainly a portion of how I was feeling and struggling, and you know, I'm mostly back where I want to be, not completely, but I had a bit of a rethink, and not exactly a rebranding. You know, I thought for a while, well, do I actually want to continue with the Keto Woman podcast? Monday Mindset is a bit different because I do that with Terry and it has a different dynamic. It's shorter, and yeah, when you're doing it with somebody else, it's a different thing anyway. It's not all reliant on you. You know, we're at the point, I think it's been more than 4 years now with Keto Women. So I say, well, you know, has it had its time? Have I got to that point where, you know, people have heard it all before? Is there any point in carrying on? And so I decided to make a few changes, and one of the things I've done is bring in some different formats, so some repeat formats. So I do a Mindset Matters episode about once a month, whatever, you know, every now and then with Terry, where we talk about the more sort of mindset, behavioral side. I have a Keto Foodie Favorites, where I talk to my friends Dan and Erica, and they talk about a food ingredient of some kind, and they're food bloggers, so they have some recipes they can share and things like that. I do a Bite-Sized Nutrition, where I talk to Megan Pfeffer, who's a nutritionist. I've made them a little bit easier in the sense that they're a bit shorter, so there's less time that goes in. And also, it was just something, you know what it's like when you've been doing the same thing for a long period of time? You get a bit jaded with it. And so shaking things up a bit can help you as the producer.
Well, can I just jump in and say that? Because I think that's exactly what I heard earlier when you said, have people heard all this before? And I thought, I don't think that, well, listeners, please tell me if you think I'm wrong. I don't think listeners listen or get into our shows as much as we do, because we're part of them. We make them, we listen back to it, we edit it, in your case, and me in the past. And I think sometimes it's more that we maybe get a little bit tired thinking we've said the same thing or we've heard the same thing. I think for most listeners, they come and go. I'm sure there's some listeners who stick with you the whole time. But certainly with my podcast listening, I'll listen to something for a year, every single episode. Then suddenly it'll be 3 months and I haven't heard it. And I think, oh, that's weird. I got out of a habit of listening to that.
And then you just pick and choose.
Yeah, and you pick and choose. And that's fine. I kind of think that's how it should be in a way. You know, if someone wants to skip one episode and listen to the next one, whatever. It's all there for them, and they pick and choose what they want. And so for the person listening, they're not, it's like email marketing or something, isn't it? You think you write an email, well, I do for my business, and I think, have I said this before? Probably have. Am I getting a bit? But the person reading it might not have read it before, or in our case, listened to it before. For them, it might be a fresh new angle that they're hearing for the first time. But I think it's the fatigue that as a producer, you can feel like, oh, it's just the same old, same old. And you want to keep it fresh for you. I think that's more important, because if you don't keep it fresh for you, then maybe that's where the resentment or the lack of enjoyment comes from, where you start thinking, is there any point doing this anymore? And what am I getting out of this? And I think you've got to be careful of that sort of burnout with anything like this.
That's a very good perspective, actually, and not one that I'd really considered, but yeah, you're completely accurate there. You know, you're forced to listen to it over and over again every week. So, of course, you're focusing on all those details. You're focusing on the fact that you've said that however many times before, or, you know, you've had a similar guest on, or, you know, how many different stories are there to tell? But yes, you're absolutely right. You forget that people don't necessarily listen every week, or if they do, they are not listening to it 20 times like you are. So it's an advantage there. But yes, I think it did just sort of refresh things a bit for me. And yeah, you're right, make things more enjoyable for me. And hopefully that translates into the tone. You know, I'm still looking at potentially shaking up the look of the graphics and potentially the music. Haven't got round to that yet, but I scrapped the canned intro and now just do a sort of roundup of what I've been doing over the week, which again, you know, some people really enjoy and other people will just fast forward to get to the, you know, the main interview part.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
That's my focus too. I'm going to do that next. I'm going to do the reading out an intro, which is going to be, I think it's like the Two Keto Dudes podcast, right? They always read it out, their introduction, which is slightly different depending on what they're talking about. And I think actually that works, because I realize the way I listen to podcasts is I probably skip those bits quite often, because if it's the same every week, why would you listen? You know what's going to come up. But I think it's a bit more interesting just to literally get the microphone and just talk. And I think that's the thing about podcasts. The production quality is important, but actually authenticity is more important. And so you talking to your audience about what your podcast is about and what you're doing probably is much more genuine an experience than just a recording of this podcast is this. We talk to this person, we do that. You know, we talk to the odd man. I love that in your intro before. Miranda and me, we're odd men. So, you know, so I think, you know, that was good. But I think changing that is what I'm going to do on my podcast for sure, because that's, you know. And actually, my podcast this last year, I think I've kind of trying to get to the soul of what the podcast is about. So when I started mine, it was very much about the stories. And I know that's really important to you as well. And it's about the stories of people who maybe hadn't been on a podcast before, but they were like a normal person like me who's just following this lifestyle. And I always say to people, transformation stories are great. They're inspiring. However, if you've got a goal of, you know, I need to lose weight for a beach holiday, or maybe more, you know, existential, like, you know, like getting into a wedding dress or whatever it might be, that's all very well. But actually, what happens the day after the wedding? Mm. What happens the day after the holiday? How do you actually maintain this? And I want the stories where people have had a transformation story and then maybe they've had a bit of a wobble, then they've tried to work out what works for them. I think that's much more inspiring to learn that. And I did a lot more kind of, I suppose you could call them, you know, the A-lister celebrity type of speakers as well this year when I did the big conversation episodes. However, I think my favourites are always going to be a genuinely lovely story about somebody talking honestly about their perspective and being very candid about how they've managed in the darker times, not just in the good times. And that's always been a highlight for me. And there's a show that by the time we're actually, this will come out, this will be, the show would have come out on air, although it's not yet. And it's a chat group where what happened is, a bit of a backstory here quickly. In August 2020, Aranda came onto my show. I know you know Aranda. And he came to talk about this group that he was setting up and how he wanted to help people. Well, I spoke to that group a year and a bit on recently. Mm-hmm. And it was just seeing the change that had happened in these people's lives over a year.
Great, yeah.
And put it into the context of, I knew the start of the journey because some of the people in that group had actually heard it on my podcast, and so that's why they joined this group. And now they've, you know, in one case, reversed type 2 diabetes. In another case, lost weight, you know, changed their relationship. Somebody's actually written a book because of this group that supported them. And I was like, wow, that is my favorite show because it just shows me the power of community and how low carbon keto with other people is so powerful to change lives, not just their health, but actually their whole health, their mental health, their well-being, social connections, all these elements. And I thought, that's the soul of my show. That I never want to lose that. You know, you can talk to a big guest who comes on and they can almost be a little bit like any other podcast, talking to Ted Naiman, Dr. Unwin, whoever it might, or Dr. Unwin, whoever it might be, you know, it becomes a bit samey. But I think hearing a genuine story from somebody that maybe nobody even knows who they are, that always is the heart and soul of my show. And I don't want to lose that. Even if I have bigger names, those interviews are going to be the highlight for me, for sure.
I agree completely. And there are two things there. It's one thing I'd forgotten, that was a new format that I was going to do that I started with. The first one was when I talked to Susie Edge, which I know she's a friend of yours as well.
Yeah, Susie's great.
But yes, it was that, you know, what people do when they're, because I think when we start keto, most of us get evangelical about it and it feels kind of really easy because everything's working like it's never worked before and it's fantastic.
And it's novel.
And yeah,
it's
and
novel.
You can stick to it and you feel really gung-ho about it. And then at some point, and this is not the case for everybody, but it's a case for a lot of people, that everything starts going a little bit wrong. Everything goes off the rails completely or otherwise.
And life happens, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Stress that wasn't there before is now there. And that means your food choices change or you're more tired or whatever, you know, life happens, doesn't it?
And it's those stories of how you find your way back and how you do things differently and what you've learned from things in the past. And so that's an interesting thing, I think. And these things, just as you were saying with experience, building experience with a business, it's these kind of things only come with time and they only come with experiencing. So for all the people who beat themselves up when things start going wrong, it's valuable experience. You know, and the other point that you were saying about what you feel is the heart and soul of your podcast, and I think that comes in again with the potentially what you were talking about potential burnout as a podcaster, is making the kind of podcast that you would want to listen to. Because I think if you stick to that and if you're genuinely putting something out that you would enjoy listening to, there are other people like you who would enjoy it. And that passion will filter through.
Yeah.
And that's what I always think about when I'm questioning, you know, what I'm doing with changing the intro or whatever it is. And I think about, you know, my favorite podcast is Adam Buxton's podcast. I had the great pleasure of going and seeing him on tour recently.
Oh, wow.
And it was fabulous. And I just love him. And part of that is because I've got to know him through his podcast.
And Rosie the dog.
Exactly. And not only that you get to know him through the conversations, but the bit I really enjoy is his intro and outro that he records walking Rosie out in the fields. You know, sometimes it's pouring with rain and you can hear it. And it's different every week. And sometimes he's talking about the most mundane and boring quote unquote things, but those are the bits that as the listener, those are the bits that I often enjoy the most.
Yeah.
So I remind myself with things like that of just thinking about what I enjoy listening to and trying to put that passion into what I do.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Of course, it's been, I mean, one of the biggest changes for me has been I was sort of pushed into this learning how to edit because when I mean, as you know, the Two Keto Dudes, that's how the podcast came about. They were looking for somebody to do a keto show for women, hosted by a woman, asked me, and that's how it all started. And they did it all for me. You know, yeah. All the editing and everything was done for me. I did the creative content creation bit and everything else was taken care of. But when that funding ran out, that was the point, you know, I had to decide if you want to continue with this, you're either going to have to find the money to pay somebody else to do it, or you're going to have to learn how to do it yourself. And, you know, I did the latter and found out that one, I quite enjoyed doing it, and two, I'm quite good at it. And so that's gone on to become a new career for me. Mm. You know, I not only produce my own two podcasts, but now I produce podcasts for other people. You know, I have Kim Houghton's Keto Life Support podcast, been doing for about a year now, and recently got involved with the Fasting Method, of course, with their new podcast, and producing that for them. So, you know, it's really, sometimes you sort of stumble into these new options that end up working out really well. You know, I get to work from home and create my own schedule so I can get up in the mornings and go for a swim and then take the dogs out for a walk, and I can create my own work schedule and be at home with the dogs rather than having to think about, you know, going to work 9 to 5 and who's going to look after the dogs and how to do all that, you know. So it's, yeah, me being a podcaster has led into all sorts of other things apart from just these discussions and questions about podcasting itself.
Yeah, you know what? That is, for me, you've just hit on a maxim for life, which sounds a bit dramatic and over the top, but that's who I am. And I honestly believe the more generous you are with your talents and skills and your time, those things, it's almost like writing lottery tickets, are more likely to come through. So the fact that you answered that call from Mr. Franklin and Mr. Morris to try and, you know, start a female-based keto podcast, and little did you know that was going to lead on to a very successful podcast show, but because you're like really high up in the rankings, like, aren't you, Daisy? Like, your show is like up there in terms of top percentage of the world.
No idea, to be honest. I used to, no, I think that's a gross exaggeration. I used to get my knickers in a real twist comparing myself to other people. You know, I used to bemoan the fact that I was a tiny little fraction of of the listeners that the Two Keto Dudes did, for example. And I'm dreadful for getting into that comparing game. But then, yes, I can remember recording with somebody and they told me their download numbers, which were a fraction of mine. So we're all somewhere on a spectrum. And at some point, you let it go. You know, somebody was asking me the other day about how do you find out where you rank here and there. And I said, my piece of advice there is to forget about that.
Yes, I agree.
Just focus on putting out something that you would enjoy listening to, that you know some other people enjoy listening to, whether it's 5 people, 50 people, 50,000 people. It doesn't really matter too much at the end of the day.
No, it's the quality of how they interact with it as well. Like you say about this group idea, the idea there's a group that's actually helping people, and I've helped in some small way with that, really means a lot to me. Whereas I had 1,000 people listen, but only partially listen in the background, not really care, what's the point in that? You know, and I totally agree with you on that. But what I was going to say there was that, you know, by your generosity of just picking up the mantle and going for it, meant that you've got a podcast which is very successful in many ways, but also it's led to this new career. And I think that's an important lesson in life, actually, that sometimes we can limit our beliefs and think, what's the point in doing X, because all it is X, and I don't really know if I want to do X and Y. But then sometimes there's WHY, but then sometimes there's actually an argument to saying, let's go and do X and just see what happens. And then it leads to the other things that happen after it. And then next thing you know, your whole career's changed. And I think that's how it works. I mean, one of the things from a podcast point of view that I never thought would happen, I didn't think it wouldn't happen, I just didn't think of it at all, was to have these friendships. So I wouldn't have got to know you if it wasn't for the fact that I've got a podcast. I wouldn't have got to know, you know, some of my listeners who are wonderful people if I didn't have a podcast, because I wouldn't have had that same way of connecting with them. And we're going to do a meetup next year, which I'm really looking forward to, because I've not met these people in the flesh, although I have through Zoom calls and fasting with them, and they've been on my show, and we've got to know each other through the Facebook group. But actually, face-to-face can be really nice. What a privilege to know you've got this lovely connection with somebody that you can just meet them. And it's a bit weird in a way, because I feel like I'm on the back foot, because they probably know me, or certainly a side of me, very well, and I'm going to get to know them. And it's that kind of, oh, hang on a minute, you know, what do I say without, okay, how do I get that conversation going in a way that I can learn more about them without interrogating them? You know, tell me about this, tell me about that, tell me about this, I don't know much about you. But they probably do know me, and it's kind of a bit daunting in a way, actually, to think, when they meet me face to face, will it be the same experience or not as well? Or will it be different? I mean, you probably have come across that, right? Have you met listeners in the past, and how have you managed to manage that interaction? Or maybe I'm overthinking it.
No, absolutely. And it's something, I think, especially if you're a bit of a self-effacing Brit, that it's something that's quite tricky to navigate. And especially it was the case, really, I guess, mostly at Keto Fest for me,
yeah,
where I would have, yeah, people who were kind of ardent fans, you know, even as I'm saying it, I'm finding it very difficult to say it and admit to it. But yes, you would have people coming up and sort of fangirling you, and it would just be so strange. But then again, I would relate it to a podcast like, and I'm not comparing myself to Adam Buxton here, but my kind of relationship with him, you know, it's a totally sort of one-way thing. Again, just as you were saying, I feel like I know him because he lets us into his life through his podcast, and you get to learn about him, and you get to feel like you know him and you like him. And so if you were ever to meet him, yeah, I'd absolutely be fangirling. So, you know, you relate it back to, yes, you have people who are listening to you and who like you because of the things you say, the way you say them. And so, yes, when you get into that moment where they're meeting you, knowing you quite well, and yet it's the first time you've met them, and it's weird, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also lovely, you know, it's wonderful when people come up and say, you know, oh, can I hug you? I feel like I know you. You know, I love listening to your podcast. Maybe some of it's rubbed off on them and inspired them to make changes. Whatever. It's lovely to get that feedback. And once you, yeah, if you're like me anyway, get over the sort of embarrassment of it. And just, I think if you're just somebody who likes hearing people's stories, is curious and interested in people, and that's where I've always felt like you, when you have this conversation, when you're interviewing someone, I always walk away from thinking that I know them a bit. I've got to know them and got to like them. And I always feel when I'm interviewing somebody that I've made a strong connection with them.
Yeah, yeah. Can I ask a question about recording? Have you ever walked away from a podcast thinking, oh man, that wasn't how I meant it to go, or it had an edge to it, and then you listen back and it's been fine? Have you ever had that?
Yeah, yeah. There have been ones where, and it's only happened once. I have re-recorded an episode once.
Okay.
It was one of my early ones, and actually I will put it mostly down to my inexperience as an interviewer. You know, I didn't draw out enough. I think I'd been very lucky with the first few episodes I did, where it was just kind of, I would just like wind up the guest and let them go.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and they would share things and they weren't hesitant, and I didn't have to steer it at all. And then I came across somebody who basically just kind of floundered and didn't know where to go.
Yeah.
And because I hadn't prepared, and so I went on from that, is getting some bullet points, especially people who are used to coming on podcasts, you know, you do just wind them up and let them go. But people who've never been on a podcast before, sometimes they need some steering, they need some help. And so I was always sort of learning from the people I was talking to and learning better ways to help them bring out their best story.
Yeah.
So there were some valuable things I learned as I was learning about how to try and get the best out. I mean, that's really, that's a nitty gritty for me when it comes to editing. You know, one of the reasons I spend so much time on it, and a bit of a perfectionist and trying to let some of that go. But a big part of that is wanting the person I'm editing to sound the very best they can. So, you know, getting the sound of it, so the technical things you do with that piece of audio, but also taking out a lot of the stutters and the ums and the ahs and things. I just want them to sound as good as they can for them, and also, of course, for the person who's listening, to make it the best experience it can be for them too.
Definitely. I find that, you know, we are, unlike mainstream journalism, if you're a politician, I've had this experience, believe me, where the journalist is there in combat with you, and you very much know what, you know, this is going to be, you'll be very careful. You've got to kind of...
You're always on the defensive.
You're on the defensive, but also you have to kind of move with the interview so that you're not tying yourself into, like, putting yourself in a corner. I've certainly faced that in the past. And so this is very different, isn't it? A podcast host, we're very much on their side trying to help them, like you just said, perfectly, better than I could, but them just to be themselves and to have the platform to be able to say what they want to. But there was one person who, and I'm not going to say who they were, it was a great interview, by the way, and it did go out as it was, but it was a very hard process and I was exhausted by the end of it. And I don't generally get exhausted. Like, I'm the sort of person who, after this conversation, for instance, will feel really energized. And as an extrovert, this is my kind of energy source. But after that one, I felt so tired because we were about 15 minutes in and effectively we'd gone through everything that I'd planned. And I thought, okay, now I know, you know what it's like, really. You've got a plan, but at the same time, you also react to what comes up and you're having a real conversation. But the way that Clement Attlee was described by Tony Benn back, you know, decades ago, is that he'd be given a question, a bit like a dog with a treat, he'd gobble it up and it'd be gone. And that's the question over. You're like, oh, okay. And this is what this person was like. So you'd ask them a question. And I realized when I was going wrong, because my questions were so long, their answer was so short. And I was like, hang on a minute.
Yes.
I've got to shorten my question down.
Need to make it more open-ended.
Yeah, I've got to make it a lot more open-ended and shorter to give them a springboard here. So I had to change my questioning style halfway through the interview because first 15 minutes in, because I realized this is going to end very quickly. And then I had to really draw out from different angles that I knew. I'm going to be very careful not to say who this is now. But I had to draw out some different angles quickly and think of my feet. And then as they would say something, I'd then try to latch on to something they said to draw it out further. And I kind of realized that, you know, I've never been trained in this, and I wouldn't say I'm necessarily good at it, but it was just that training of doing it. The experience of doing that sort of episode is actually really useful because it made me reflect afterwards about how I do this now. And really, I need to be very careful to listen. I don't know if you feel the same, but some podcast hosts, I'm not talking about low carb ones here, some podcast hosts and journalists, you can tell they haven't read somebody's book or they don't really know the story of the person. They're not really interested in them either, and they've got their set questions. And I feel like if you did that, you'd be sunk in no time because you have to really listen to what they're saying sometimes and draw that out further. Put your plan to one side if needs be to really go down that new avenue you've got. But, you know, or sometimes you think, I know that you reversed your diabetes. Please, let's go into that. Why? So you have to bring it up. Otherwise, they won't because they're not thinking that way. And it is challenging sometimes, isn't it? But I guess that's where you learn to do it better by just experiencing it.
No, it is a balance. And that's where, like I say, where I learned with that guest, where I would get bullet points. Because I know when I first went on the Two Keto Dudes podcast and had to tell my story, the way I prepared was to set out a very like bullet point style sort of timeline just to remind myself of where I wanted to go, but not in so much detail that I was kind of be reading it out. You know, I've had guests on where they've prepared what they want to say, like an essay.
Yeah.
And they're just reading it out. And
the press release.
Hear them reading it out. So it's finding out enough about their story that you've got a list of bullet points that you can take it where you need to if necessary. But it's mostly, like you say, is listening to what they're saying. To one of the things that I have in my mind is, what would I want me to ask the person I'm interviewing if I was listening to it? What would I be shouting out? But ask that question, that question. And I think that just that natural curiosity, and it makes me think of a meal I went out for an evening with this guy. I'd helped sell his house. I didn't really know him. And so I found him, you know, I'm almost embarrassed to say, but a bit sort of dull and boring. And he wanted to take me out for a nice meal to say thank you. And it was, oh, you know, I've got to spend the evenings with this guy. I have nothing in common. What are we going to talk about for 3 or 4
Did he listen to your show, Daisy? I'm a bit concerned now.
No.
He might be sat in the corner crying, poor guy.
This was years and years and years ago. And you know what I said to myself? I said, look, you're going out for this evening and you can either sort of be bored and distracted, or you can find things to be interested and make this a pleasurable evening. And so I just went in with that open curiosity, and I asked him questions, and I drew out an interesting conversation, because I will maintain that there is an interesting conversation to be had. There are interesting things to find out about anyone you start a conversation with. So sort of, you know, you drop all those preconceptions you might have had and just, I want to find out the interesting things about you, because there will be things that you're passionate about. There will be things that, if I give you the space to tell me about them, that passion will come through and I will find them interesting because you're sharing that passion. And so, yeah, I learned about, you know, his boat that he had and the challenges he had because it was diesel and the price of diesel and this. And I ended up having, legitimately, genuinely, a very pleasurable evening.
Being interested in others, so that's the key, isn't it? Interested in others and what they're going to say.
Genuinely interested, not just interested because, you know, you've got to put out a podcast, but genuinely immersing yourself in finding out what's interesting and drawing out what's interesting, not only to give them their platform, but to give something interesting for the listener at home too.
Yeah.
But that has to come from a place of authenticity. If it doesn't, I think the listeners can hear it.
But I think in some conversations in life generally, people are more interested in getting their side of the story across than listening. Mm. And so, you know, and I kind of learned that about myself, actually. I went to an event fairly recently, so I'll be careful what I give away about this person because they might hear. But, you know, by the end of this evening, I knew their whole life story and some really ups and downs about their life. And I actually recommended they write a book at the end. I was like, I would pay for this book. But they knew nothing about me at all. And I thought, that's okay. I don't mind. If they didn't ask me anything about me, I'm not going to just suddenly start, by the way, I do this. I do, you know, it's not an expose of me, is it? And I think that finding people interesting is a really important skill. And it's a really enjoyable thing, actually. Just to, you know, if they want to ask about me, fine. I don't mind talking about myself or not. But learning about them, I was like, yeah, I always find that really edifying to hear someone's story, especially when you do learn about the ups and downs, because that's what real life is about, isn't it? It's not the polished final version that we like to tell ourselves. It's the ups and downs, how it all works. I actually heard a really good quote recently, and it said, we think our brains are the Oval Office, but in actual fact, our brain is the press office. So we're trying to like, you know, appraise and rewrite and understand what we've already thought and done. And we're trying to put the best spin on it all the time. And that's what our brains are doing. And I think conversation and story is part of that. It's like trying to analyze, why'd you do that then? Oh, I don't know, actually. Let's think about why I did that. And I think I've kind of taken that on board, and I learned that this year, actually, that quote. And I think that quite often now, that we're trying to chew through why you made those decisions. We try to think we're so rational, but in actual fact, we're not. We're human beings. We, you know, things happen. We don't know why they happen. Let's talk about it then. Let's try and analyze it. And I think that's where the real nuggets are quite often in podcasts.
Yes, absolutely. And there are the dangers of overthinking. And I've learned from you that today, that new perspective that I hadn't really thought about before. You know, so thanks for that. And being reminded that, yeah, if people are finding it boring, well, they'll just switch off and they'll, you know, they'll pick another week.
Yeah.
Or they, you know, they'll drop you off their podcast list for 6 months or forever, or, you know, come back when they feel like it. It's that people don't have to listen to, just because you're having to listen to everything you put out, other people don't. They can pick and choose. They can start a podcast, you know, you must have done it. You start a podcast thinking it's going to be interesting. 20 minutes in, oh, I've had enough. I'll listen to the next
one. Yeah, we've all been there, of course. And that's the thing, you're so right. The free market in this way of ideas and content and whatnot is exactly that, isn't it? You pick and choose what you like. If somebody doesn't like it, they'll find something they do like. That's why when I see new podcasts come along, I think, oh, how exciting. There's another one I can listen to. I wonder what this is going to be like. And they're all different because the angle they take, the person who's presenting them, you know, their whole, maybe their whole sort of format's different, whatever it might be. But that's fine. And, you know, as long as you're finding it engaging and enjoyable and it's what you want. I think it comes down to what's your why, though, doesn't it? If your why is to get the mainstream, then you'd make something very bland and accessible to everyone. And I don't want to do that. So you want to make...
Big mistake.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So you want to, you know, you'd make Mrs. Brown's Boys, no offence to that show, but it looks pretty terrible. But actually, you know, you want to make something that you can be proud of, that you like. And if that means that one or two people connect with it, brilliant, you've won. That's why I look at it. So, yeah.
Yes, and kind of sticking to your guns. I mean, I've been watching you. You've been doing more and more live stuff, which is something that I've always shied away from. But we were talking briefly before we started recording. You've actually really been enjoying that side of it.
Absolutely love doing it. And I think...
You're a good speaker, though. I mean, ultimately, you are a politician, really. So I don't know if I am actually.
I think I'm who I am, which means I'm quite good at politics. I think it's the other way around.
Okay, that makes sense.
The way you said that sounded a bit like almost you've got training in a certain profession and that's why you're good at it. But I've never had training in politics ever. I've just found that I have beliefs and ideas that I really believe I could make change in society by politics. And so I've kind of been good at doing it as well. Although
yeah,
I've never
so
been
you're more of a natural politician rather than...
Well, politician, I guess, in that way is trying to convince people of what you think to be right and why you think it's right. And I don't think in this show I ever kind of say, you know, this is the way. I just say why I think something and I try to share that and I try to get people to say what they think. And I think disagreement's really healthy as well, actually. I think it's...
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, there are lots of things you do that are very unpolitician-like. I guess really what I had in my mind when I said that is that you're quite, you seem anyway, a very practiced speaker, or you certainly come across as a practiced speaker.
I can tell you exactly where that comes from. So my dyslexia is my superpower in that regard. So if you get me to write, I wouldn't say hopeless because I think that's a judgment statement, but I certainly struggle and I find that very difficult. So I do handwritten notes in the orders. It's the worst thing I do. I feel really nervous. My writing's terrible. I probably will make spelling mistakes all over the place. At school, I didn't feel like I could really do anything well at school. I was just a failure all the time. And the only thing I could ever do is speak and talk. And,
right,
you know, I couldn't read the whiteboard in front of me, but I could listen to the teacher, remember everything they said, and then be able to describe it back to somebody. And my memory is very sharp, but my means of communication wasn't as good. And so, for instance, you know, like laptops, computers, that's been the saving of me because I can do everything now in a way that I couldn't in the 90s at school and the 80s in primary school. And I think that, you know, what you're hearing is not a politician. It's somebody who's, this is my main form of communication. That's why podcasting works so well for me. I'm not a blog writer, naturally. I find that sort of thing hell on earth. I find it awful. But I can make this kind of content and I can think on my feet and I can express what I'm thinking and feeling very easily. And that just naturally also works with politics. So that's where it's come from.
Makes a lot
so it's
of
actually
sense.
Decades of struggle and pain. That's why I'm quite good at it. Because it's the only thing I had, if I'm honest.
But it works well for live. We were saying one of the reasons, I do come across as a bit of a control freak, liking to do the edit. So I like these crossovers because I get to edit it. But a big part of that actually is I'm not exactly the opposite, but I don't have the confidence and I feel more relaxed if I know I'm going to be editing myself at the end because I know I stumble a lot, I repeat a lot. So knowing I'm going to be editing it means I can relax and not have to worry so much about the live content. But it is something I've thought about just, I guess, because so many more people are demanding that live and visual. But I do also have an old school mentality when it comes to podcast as a form in and of itself.
Yeah.
For me, podcasts are very intimate. There's something you experience through your ears, quite often plugged into your headphones or your earbuds, as you're like me when you're walking down to the sea or walking the dogs. So it becomes this very intimate audio experience. And so I put together my podcast with that as the end result. When it becomes a visual thing as well, it's a whole different animal.
Yeah,
to me.
Oh, I completely
Podcasting
agree.
Podcasting for me is a very kind of specific form that.
Well, I'm going to pick up on that because I've thought about this a lot.
Hinges partly on the fact that it's audio only and not visual. So it not being visual is part of the thing I like about it, if that makes sense.
I completely agree. So what frustrates me is when you have a podcast that's clearly video based, not audio. The audio is actually there because they think it's another channel they can put their content out on. And I think the worst I've ever heard was where someone was saying, and if you look now at this thing I'm showing you on my screen, this is how this works. And I feel so disenfranchised by that because I think, well, it's clearly not made for me. I'm a podcast listener. I totally agree that my whole focus is audio. So the podcast is the show. The YouTube is a version of it. So if you want to put it on YouTube, you can, but ultimately it's an audio experience. And that's why the whole focus is about audio. That's why sometimes I've had speakers who have said, I've done some great series with people, you know, like a little bit of a learning sort of, you know,
yes, I've seen those. They're good, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And, but sometimes people have said, oh, I'm going to do slides. I'm like, well, don't do slides because that's going to kill the listening experience because there's several things there. Firstly, I honestly believe in painting pictures in people's minds with words. I think that's really powerful. And I think it's much more impactful to let somebody have their own takeaway image of that event than it is to literally paint it for them. If I said to you, oh, you know, there's this terrible sofa and it had stains on it and it was terrible and it was embarrassing when someone came around and saw it, the look on their face, you are literally painting that in your mind. Mm. If I showed you the sofa and you said, well, it's not that bad, what are you talking about? You know, you'd be like disappointed, like you were over egging that one or whatever. So I think the painting the pictures in the mind is really important. And that's why I always think if you can just make people talk more than show, they will actually use better language to describe what they're saying anyway than just depending on a slide. And let's be honest, slides can kind of kill things anyway. So the live part and the video part are quite different. The video is there as a bit of an echo of the podcast, and not everything goes on the YouTube. It's just another channel to say this is the podcast, what we do. The lives, however, I've only done lives with people who are the guest speakers who are probably more used to doing lives and it's much more knowledge-based. Mm. And the reason I do that is because people can ask questions and be part of it. So it's not about the live experience for me or the person on the show. It's the person who might be a listener regularly who thinks, oh, hang on a minute, I'm in a live with this person I've always wanted to meet and maybe they can't meet them, but now they feel like they have because they can literally write their comment. I can share that with that person. They can get the answer to their comment or their question straight away from that person, like Ted Naiman or someone. And so they've had an interaction and it's my way of saying, I'm bringing this person to your living room now. You can actually ask them something. And I think what a privilege that is to be able to do that to somebody, to say, I'm going to help you meet the person you've always wanted to ask that question of, because it's going to be very hard. They live in America, you live in the UK, to do that or bump into them at any point in these events, because maybe you don't go to America or they're not going to come to the UK. So this is your opportunity. So that's why I like to do lives. But I think for this sort of thing, this would not work as a live because you'd be more aware about people listening. And I'm sure you're the same as me. I don't really think about people listening when I'm in a conversation. It's just you and me now and a snoring dog in the background. That's our, this is our little world, you know, this is our little ozone layer around this little world right now is us. And I think the fact people are listening and they're going to be sat in our living rooms or wherever we are as part of this is really lovely and they can be intimate with us. But that's why this doesn't work as a live, because a live, you'd be aware of, oh, there's now 10 people watching us. Oh, okay, I wonder who they are. And it changes the dynamic completely. And that's why I think there's a place for both, really, in my podcast.
That's very interesting. I like that. And it's, yes, you set up this whole, special form, really, that works in and of itself. You know, it works well perfectly for that. And I like that. I like the perspective that you have, that you're bringing together the people who, like you say, wouldn't have a chance to have a conversation with these speakers, but they get to do that through you as the medium. Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, like you said, I think it's spot on. If you're a listener, what would you want to ask the question of? And I think I do that all the time. But this is just the next level. Literally ask the person your question. Mm. And, you know, what a nice thing, a nice service to be able to do for people. And that's the way I look at it. So, yeah, so that's kind of my view, really. And I think next year I will do a few more live shows. I mean, The Big Conversation was amazing. And you know, just for anyone on your show who doesn't know about this, so it was, you know, people in different continents. It was Richard Morris and Nina Teicholz and Amber O'Hearn. I mean, these people are not even close in America necessarily. So trying to organize.
I was going to say, I could imagine
zones.
The challenges of trying to sort that time zone out. What time did you end up recording in the end? It's usually, I have to say, the person who usually gets the short end of the straw is poor old Richard Morris. He's usually the one recording at like 3 o'clock.
He loves it at that time, though, doesn't he?
He does, actually, yeah. He is a night owl. Although he's been forced into being more of a morning person with his studying. But
I've had to do that as well. I find that as I get older now, the nights are having more of a knock-on effect on me metabolically and the way I'm feeling. So I'm getting much more sleep than I was a few months ago. But that time was particularly horrific and I had a bad migraine the next day. So I did the midnight to 2 a.m. shift, and then it was in the morning for Richard, the late afternoon, early morning for the Americans, really early morning for Amber, and then like afternoon for Richard. And that seems to work. But it was intense. And you know, these people, I must admit, I'm going to share a little bit of a mistake that I made in The Big Conversation. So there's a guy who helps me with the podcast, but because it was midnight, it's a bit unreasonable to say, can you just work at midnight to 2 a.m? And my stressful part was not the conversation part. I quite enjoy the conversations. It was trying to do the tech side. So trying to choose who's on the screen at what time. And
I know when you were showing me all the different things, this software that you use, I'm thinking, how can you be focusing on having a conversation and doing that at the same time?
Well, you're right. I mean, most of the time you set it up like now, we're talking through it, although we're not recording on it, and you don't have to do anything now. It's just set up and it's running. But when you're trying to change screens with people and you're also trying to talk to camera, and poor Amber was on the screen. I thought I was on screen, but I couldn't see her because I had my notes up on my screen. So I didn't realize what was going out at the time. And there's poor Amber sat there, the main person on screen, looking a bit uncomfortable, like, what's going on? Why am I on screen? And there's me talking like some sort of ventriloquist, you know, behind her. It's like doing the words or something. And I thought, oh my goodness. And I thought, thank goodness this is a podcast, that, you know, people will never know that if they only listen to it. So don't give me away, Daisy. But it's that kind of live moment you think, yeah, that is a bit stressful. But actually, you know, things coming, people's questions coming in, addressing those on the screen, people answering them, that is really fun. I thought this is, you know, I'm going to do a few more of those next year, but they take a good month of prep because, you know, you're trying to get 4 people in different time zones. And also, never do it in October, early November or March, because the time zone changes.
Oh, don't get me started.
Unbelievable.
I just wish we as a world would scrap stupid poxy daylight savings, everyone. But if we're all going to insist on doing it, or not all, that's part of the problem. But if the countries that have decided they're going to do it,
change on the same day, right?
Just bloody well change. Yeah. Everyone do it on the same day. Honestly, it's ridiculous. I think Australia does it first, and then it's
they're in October,
the States,
like the 4th,
and then it's us,
year.
Or it's the, everyone does it on a different day.
So that's my problem.
Like,
so Richard was then an hour out.
So annoying.
So Richard went from being 1 hour out, so I was going to be recording at 11 o'clock at night, and now it became midnight suddenly because of his time zone difference. We were about to go through our clock change at that time, I think. So we did it on the week it was changing, and America is in early November. And then I think Arizona doesn't change its clocks at all. So I've had somebody in Arizona before and it's like, no, we don't change actually. We're different to everyone else in America. And I'm like, oh my goodness.
Drives me around the bend.
I think it's Arizona. Yeah, and trying to organise the logistics of that was really hard. And there's good software online, you can do it, but it just means you're always constantly having to rethink, and it's just exhausting. Like, so you're going to be 10 in the morning at 10 at night, and I'd actually put out it will be on Wednesday, and of course I realised, no, it's not. In Australia, it's Thursday. So a New Zealand group saying, oh, I'm looking forward to this, but did you say Wednesday? I think that's Thursday for us. And I'm like, oh my goodness. You know, that was hard. It was fun, but, you know, I can't do many of them because the amount of work that goes into 2 hours is ridiculous. And by the end of it, you think, I could just had someone like, you know, one-to-one conversation done, simple. So I'll do a few, but not as many, that's for sure.
Yeah, so if you're going to do them, don't do them around clock change time.
Yeah, avoid March, avoid October, and everything's a bit easier, but it's still hard. And what about yourself? So you said you've got these changes that you've done in your podcast. What's your plan for the next year? Is there anything coming up, or is it going to be carrying on with this new sort of format?
I think it's just carrying on pretty much as I'm doing, really. Maybe thinking of some different new formats. I've got a bit lazy with finding out some, you know, searching out some new guests. So a lot of it, I say lazy, it's just been a question of time, to be honest, with a lot of it. Had so much to do here with the new work and trying to organize the house and all these things. You know, there are only so many hours in the day. It's like you were saying, you know, you've at some point you've got to free up some of your time by handing off the work to somebody else. So, you know, it's like in what you were saying before about you can focus more on the direction of the business because you've got some people to do some of the work that you were physically having to do. Same with the podcast, you can play around with some doing some different things because you've got someone doing the editing. You know, you're only one person. There are only so many things you can do in a day. But yes, no, I don't have any particular new and exciting plans at the moment. It's just trying to find a way to fit everything in and get a good overall balanced routine. And then maybe I'll think about shaking things up again. What about you?
Definitely. Well, I would love, I was going to say, I'd love to meet you in person. I think that'd be really special. And I know we're going to have a meetup at some point. We haven't got dates or anything. And, you know, next summer seems like a long time away when it's mid-December and it's freezing cold, doesn't it? But I think it'd be great to have a get together with people. And my whole idea has always been for the podcast to try to make some sort of grassroots movement for change. And I've always been a bit open to not having the answer for that necessarily, but trying to bring people together and then see where that would take us. And I feel like meeting up and getting the community together, I mean, like the Wolfpack, for instance, is what we call ourselves when we fast. And I feel like that's been one of the most powerful things for me, just to get to know people who are listening rather than only listening to me and not have the two-way conversation. And I feel like, you know, like we were talking earlier on about the meetups, it's a bit nerve-wracking, but I think that would be a really healthy next step to build that community a bit more in person, and for people to kind of, a bit like these groups really, that people get to know each other, and, you know, my listeners get to know each other a bit more too. I think that would be lovely to do. And so, you know, that's going to be one of my big focuses, I think, and thinking, what do they want and how can I help nurture that group in some way? Because I feel like this is a type of service that we do, and it gives us a lot, and it hopefully gives a lot of individuals a lot. But actually, I love the idea of communal thing, a community that works together, that knows each other, that you're helping build a community more than just the individuals listening, but the individuals together and how that works. So that's kind of my focus, I think.
Yes. No, I think community is very important. And I've been very fortunate to be involved in some wonderful online communities, has, you know, been my thing. I all started actually when I come off Facebook. That's how Daisy was born. That's a subject for a conversation another day. But, you know, the online communities has really become something that I shied away from and had become uncomfortable with how I felt online. But those communities have built, you know, starting with the Two Keto Dudes, and when they stopped their group, forming my own and sort of starting with what, you know, I decided that I wanted it to be a women only group, and the dynamic you get from that and the privilege you have of sort of starting it and setting it up and help steer it, but then, you know, watching the direction it takes and the life of its own it takes on. And that's, you know, the Kick-Ass Keto Bitches is an amazing group of women, this fantastic, supportive, nurturing environment. So yes, community is so fabulous. And I've got to know the thing about online communities is just the reach, isn't it? That you can have these friends that become such good friends all over the world that you don't necessarily meet. But you're right in that physical meeting does take things to a different level. You know, I was so lucky pre-pandemic to go to a couple of keto fests and to go to Low Carb Denver, to be able to get to meet people face to face, to be able to strengthen friendships that had already grown online with people like Kim and Terry and Louise, you know, friendships that I made and started and grown quite a lot online, to then get to spend time in the same room with these people just really strengthens those relationships. And of course, you know, what with COVID, all these kind of meetups have gone on the back burner, really. They're starting to come back in now. But certainly the conferences that I've been to in the UK have been great opportunities to meet people that you've only been able to have conversations with online. So I think it's a good idea. It would be nice to get to
meet up with
you and all the other people that we interact with on home turf.
That'd be great. So maybe next summer we'll be there in a heat wave thinking this is lovely and have a keto picnic in the park with loads of people or something. That'd be great, wouldn't it? So
sounds good.
More details to follow, eh?
Well, you must know by now how I like to end the Keto Women podcast.
Here we go.
I forgot to mention this to you before we started, but you're very good at thinking on your feet. So would you happen to have, please, a top tip for us?
Yes, this is a tip that I learned on a podcast the other day. So I'm completely recycling what somebody else told me, but I've been using it this week and it definitely works. So Mark Davidson and this group, Real Food Your Way, there's a tip that he taught his group to use, and I've been doing it as well. He says you need to take four boiled eggs, put them in a bowl, make sure they're covered up because you don't want to stink your fridge out. But you put them in the fridge, right in the middle of the fridge. So it's a place where you're going to definitely see these eggs in front of you. And if you get tempted to go to your fridge to go and eat something, especially if you're working from home and maybe you're filling time and you're getting bored and that's why you're in the fridge, not because you're hungry, the four boiled eggs are there for you as your food. And he said, I guarantee you can't eat all four boiled eggs. Mm-hmm. You might be able to eat one or two, maybe even three, a bit of a push. But if you eat four, you'd definitely feel that you've had a lot to eat. And I've used that this week and it works. I've just literally gone to the fridge and thought, what can I eat? Oh, it's the eggs. That's my choice. So I've had an egg. I only had one actually on one day this week that I've only been doing it. It filled me up and I was fine. And that was it. I carried on. And I find that it works for me because I'm very much one of these people who, you know, you said earlier on about, you know, when you're traveling and whatnot, and you don't want to just be a bit airy-fairy and just see what will happen, because I'm the sort of person who will more than likely make the wrong choice. So I find planning really helps, but also filling yourself up and having a meal when you're hungry rather than going hungry for an extra hour and then eating the wrong thing is a better move. And so filling yourself up with an egg or two is actually a really good way of keeping yourself in keto or low carb. And at the same time, you're sort of you're giving yourself a bit of a break. It's not discipline. It's more just giving yourself a bit of a better environment so you don't eat the wrong food or the choice you don't want.
Ah, yes, that's a good tip. Funnily enough, I was listening to Megan and Nadia, obviously, because I do the editing, yeah. But Megan was talking about fat fasting and, you know, the principles behind it. But it was just this idea of repetition and lack of diversity with food. And I think, yeah, that's really tapping into that, isn't it? And it's that, yeah, you go to the fridge and you open it. Oh, I feel a bit peckish. What can I have to eat? But what you're really saying is something else. You're saying, oh, I'm a bit bored and I fancy a snack or whatever it is. But if you take that choice, that diversity away, and there's something right there and it's done. So there's no excuse. There's no kind of, oh, well, I'm going to grab this because otherwise I'd have to make some hard-boiled eggs. Yeah. I've got no choice. That's the option that's there for me. So are you really hungry? If you're really hungry, it's a bit like that going back, isn't it? I'm sure you came home from school or something and said you were hungry. And well, if you're really hungry, go and have a slice of bread and butter, I think it was.
I had an apple.
Oh, but now I fancy such and such. Well, if you're really hungry, you'll be happy with that.
Yeah,
and that's the question, isn't it? Are you really hungry?
Yeah. I think so.
If you are.
That's why I like M&S. So I used to go to London and think, why don't I just have a fast food chain meal? Oh, because there's nothing else available. But actually M&S had these boiled eggs and cured meats. And I'd be like, oh no, if I go to M&S, I'm eating my food. It's really good for me. It'll do the job. Boom, done. There's no decision making. Whereas when there's a, what am I going to eat? What is there? You know, food is such a funny thing, isn't it? It's not just fuel, obviously. There's all these stories we tell ourselves. There's all these things going on with food. And yeah, I think the more you take those decisions out, the better.
Mm. There you go. Thank you very much.
Very welcome, Daisy. And it's been really lovely making this. I don't know how long this is going to take to edit, but it's a lot we've talked about there today. But I think it's good stuff.
Well, it's run into a double episode, I think, which in a lot of ways does me a favour because I edit it once and it saves on some of that extra time. So
there you go.
I had a feeling we might run long. We're both those kind of people, aren't
we? Yeah,
once we start talking, it's a bit difficult to shut us up.
You haven't spoken to somebody for a year, you know, you got a lot to catch up on, right? So this is not bad, 2 hours for a year apart, really. But no, it's been really lovely talking to you and catching up, Daisy. And yeah, thank you for coming on UK Low Carb. And thank you for having me on Keto Woman Podcast as well.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. I've really enjoyed talking to you. It's been a very great pleasure.
Great.
Thank you for staying with me right to the end. And we are almost at the end of the year. We've got just one more episode to squeeze in, and that will be coming out on New Year's Eve. And I am just about to record it in about 5 minutes with my good friend Terry Lance. We are going to be recording a Mindset Matters episode, all to do with New Year's resolutions, that kind of thing. And there'll be some overlap with a Monday Mindset episode that we recorded where we kind of ended up chatting about the same kind of thing. And it was really, really interesting. So I said, yes, we are going to have to talk about this and other things with our Keto Women listeners. So that's something to look forward to. Terry's episodes always go down a storm. But just before I sign off, it's time for this week's end quote. And we are back with one of my favourites, James Clear. You only need to know the direction, not the destination. The direction is enough to make the next choice. I'm recording this on Thursday, the day before Christmas Eve. This will be coming out on Christmas Eve. Who knows when you'll be listening to it, of course. But if I am tickling your earbuds before Christmas Day, I do hope you have a very wonderful Christmas. And if you don't do Christmas, have a very wonderful holiday. And if it's not a holiday for you, I know it's not a holiday for everyone. My father's in Thailand and he doesn't celebrate Christmas. I hope you have a very wonderful weekend. So until I see you next week for New Year's Eve, please take very good care and I'll see you soon. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.